Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Man, sometimes it feels like Monday shows get later and later, but today is for good reason. And Monday's a busy day for us. But yeah, I got up early and met a new friend, closed a new deal and a new advertiser for the show. That's always great. Did the Florida basketball and baseball preview with the Stingray show. And then we had Chris Simonis give us a, media opportunity to kind of preview. Kind of, hey, the start of the season now, right? Wrap up, spring training. And then from there, man, it feels like all day I've been doing administrative stuff. Had a chance to interview Jacoby Green's coach out of Niceville, Florida. That's up for VIP members at jeanspage.com. All of the big room stuff is free, though. Like the Chris Simonis Q&A, it's a free story to read. It's a free video to watch. And then, man, it feels like I've been chasing my tail ever since. You know, we had to build advertisers, had to do some administrative stuff. It's just what happens, man, you know. When you're running the show, you know, it's not, I wish I could just sit back and write some days, but you can't. You know, every time somebody loses a password or can't get access to Paramount Plus, then, I got to get involved, you know. And so part of the deal, not complaining. But, it's been a busy day, which kind of sets up tomorrow really well, you know, because I've already done a lot of those things, cleaned out the car, all kind of stuff today. I said, man, while I'm doing all these things, I'm gonna do it. Take care of all my little stressors. And sometimes you got to do that. Sometimes you have to take a minute for yourself and say, okay, here's all the I write them down. Here's the things that's kind of eating my lunch. I got to get all this stuff, all these little nitpicky things, because you know if you don't take care of them, next thing you know, you got a big stressor in your life because you feel like you're getting overwhelmed. So let me encourage you. Set some time, maybe once, twice a month. And just kind of sit down, do some planning, and just eliminate all these little minor things. Man, your boy feels great. Also went and floated this evening. Yeah. You need to float too, which reminds me, you can get two floats for $99, part of the Valentine's special. So call 662-268-7601. You got about 6 months, I think, that you can use those. And it doesn't have to be like husband. Okay, listen to me. You're not too good to float. You're not too masculine to float. It's not like floating in your bathtub or your pool. It's completely different. It's basically a medicinal type thing for physical and mental recovery. But if you don't want to do it, you can let her have both of them, right? You can let, hey, well, I'll buy it for her, and she can bring a friend, or she can bring, her sister or whatever. But it could be a good date night thing for you, too. I encourage you to do it. We got a lot of student athletes that float. But 662-268-7601. Talk to Dennis and answer all your questions. Whether you're a person that, you know, deals with, chronic pain or anxiety, we may be able to help you. But even if you don't deal with those things and you just need a break, like I usually get in and get put on like some acoustic music tonight. I just kind of ran the regular program and just kind of had like, 40 minutes of silence, 45 minutes of silence, you know, got to hear my own heartbeat. Hear that air going in and out of my nostrils. You know, it's like the world gets quiet. Allows your mind to get quiet. I'm telling you, give yourself a break. You deserve it. And if you've never floated before, you don't know what you're missing. You know, a lot of people are like, but Steve, you know, guys, you don't have to know how to swim. We're talking 8 inches of water, 1,200 pounds of magnesium-infused Epsom salt as I crack open this Coke Zero. So, yeah. Give yourself, man, I feel so cool right now. I mean, I just feel so chill. And I tell Dana that all the time. It's like nothing's better for me when I'm feeling stressed to go float. And sometimes I don't make time to go float. I mean, man, all this portal stuff going on, you're always afraid you're going to miss something. And so I'm like, you know what? I've got to just go get away. And I figured today I had accomplished so much with my day, I was going to reward myself with a float. And I went and floated. And I feel, in the words of Curly Bill, absolutely capital. I tell you what else is in my future too. Bulldog Burger Company. Man, I love Bulldog Burger Company. And like just when I make up my mind, okay, we're going to have Bulldog Burger Company tomorrow for lunch, immediately I start thinking, okay, what am I going to get? I know I'm getting spring rolls. That's how I've been able to maintain this youthful exuberance all these years. And I think that's a very important aspect of all this. You know, you got to take care of yourself. You get those spring rolls, they'll make you and everybody around you better looking, make the world a better place, right? But I'm thinking, you know, do I want the Pimentology add bacon? It's always a winner for me. Maybe there's a special I want to try. You know, do I go get the bulldog? Sometimes I just feel like a bulldog, you know. Sometimes I just say, you know what? I just want a great American traditional straight ahead rock and roll hamburger, and I get the bulldog. Maybe that's what you need to do too. If you're a Bulldog Burger Company newbie, let me recommend you do that. Don't get cute with it. Don't overthink it. That's what they do best, but they do a lot of things well. Those Sloppy Joe sliders, a great lunch portion. And sometimes I just want to eat fresh. You know what I'm talking about? Sometimes you just need some green vegetables in your life. And I get that BLT salad, and I don't think I've ever finished it. The portion is so substantial. I get it grilled. You may like it fried. Completely up to you. I'm not judging. But no matter how you get it, I always get it with ranch dressing. You know, you may get that the vinaigrette, and you know, I don't know. Maybe you're a little more frou-frou than me. I'm from South Mississippi. But be sure and check them out, man. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Star Vegas. Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, let's talk a little men's basketball. Bulldogs still in the top 25, and as we should be. I know sometimes we have, you know, that self-loathing segment of the fan base. Anytime something doesn't go exactly the way that we envision, we should be penalized and scourged and tied to the whipping post and all that kind of stuff. But Bulldogs with a big win. You say, but Steve, you know, Georgia hadn't been that great. Do you not recognize how difficult it is to win at Georgia? I mean, honestly, Michael White has done a great job there. Mike's been in this league a long time. And you say, you know, it should have been worse. You know, it should have been. We should have made our free throws. We should have at least gotten close. It was abysmal. But the reality of it is we win the game and even our record in conference, despite having a pitiful night shooting free throws. Anytime that you get a win on the road in this league, no matter the style points, it is big. It is huge. That stuff matters so much in the net. And listen, this is a league that's probably going to get a dozen teams in a tournament. So yes, we still expect to get in the tournament. 17-6, and that's one we had to have. I mean, we talked about that. If you lose that one, you begin to kind of wonder about the collective psyche of the team. But, man, this Bulldog team is 5-2 in true road games and 4-1 on neutral floors. So 9-3 away from the hump, 8-3 at home. And those losses at home, right, they've all been the top 20 opponents. It's not like we've had the bad loss to the bad team. Now, if we lost some games we should have won, you better believe it. But, man, don't bail on this team. Don't do it. Let's take a quick look back because, you know, we've already kind of had a chance to digest that win over Georgia. We'll take a quick look back, and then we'll kind of look ahead to tomorrow night's game against Florida. But, 76-75 winners. And there were a couple things that I want to point out of this. So, yeah, Bulldogs, again, 17-6, 5-5. Georgia drops to 16-8 and 4-7 in the league. So, State an 8-point lead at the break. And, it was kind of a herky-jerky half. It was a physical game. And one of the things that I will say about this game, especially when you remove the emotion, when you're in the emotion of the moment, any little thing that happens and a call gets made, like, oh, these guys are terrible. I thought they let both teams play a little bit, and I think that favors us. I don't know, there's a lot of teams in the league that can push us around in the post. That was one of the concerns we had beginning of the year, is what are we going to do with a team that has a dominant post guy and perhaps could kind of bully us. But, you know, there just hasn't been that type of individual in the league this year. So our guys have been able to hold their own. Josh Hubbard with 16 points. Michael Nwoko was 11, 5 of 5 from the floor, and then 1 of 4 from the free throw line. But early on, it really felt like it was going to be his day. And that's a good, solid day for him. Like to have a few more rebounds. But you know, the reality of it is, Nwoko, I thought, kind of let everybody know early on that our post game was going to be there. Claude O'Harris with 7 points, 3 of 7 from the field, 1 of 4 from beyond the arc, and missed his only free throw attempt. Cam Matthews, again, you know, I don't know if Cam's just not 100% or people are just intent on not letting him, you know, get going. You know, he's never been that prolific scorer, but he's always been a guy that probably gets you a double-double. But he did hand out 6 assists. That's always a big thing. 6 points, a couple steals, too, just to 4 rebounds. Everybody finds Cameron Matthews when a shot goes skyward. R.J. Melendez, 19 minutes of action, just to 4 points. You say, well, Steve, how do we win? Well, Keyshawn Murphy. Keyshawn Murphy with 14 points. There was a stretch there. Keyshawn Murphy was killing Georgia. Pulled down 8 boards. I can't get this tickle out of my throat. But, again, Keyshawn, again, showing how important it was to get him to come back. You know, there was in the portal for a couple days, ends up coming back. It was big. Riley Kugel kind of gets going again, too. 10 points for him in 22 minutes. Knocked down a couple of big threes. Sean Jones, we know that he's a good on-the-ball defender. He's the hustle guy. He's never a guy you're going to run a lot of offense for. He's just kind of opportunistic. You know, 6 points. You know, 3 boards for him. And pretty good defense. I think he can live with that. Guy Chaw got out there and mixed it up a little bit, too, you know. But, yeah, State 6 of 20 from beyond the arc, 6 of 18 from the free throw line. Think about that for a second. We made as many free throw attempts as we did 3-pointers, and that's not a good thing in this situation. 31 boards in the game. And you know, you knew this was going to be kind of a grinded out game. Georgia with 32 boards, right? It's just kind of how it works. We were just kind of opportunistic, and I really thought late when they would kind of – we'd get a little bit of separation, they would come back. It never felt like we were in complete control, but to me it never felt like we were in trouble. Even when the crowd kind of got on a roll with them, I just never really felt like, hey, they're going to find a way to surpass us, get a lead, and put us in a rearview mirror. I just never felt that way. But 32 points from the Bulldog bench, that makes all the difference. It truly does. 46 points in the paint against just 28 for them. So we win against a team that likes to run some half-court offense. You know, and again, we talked about Asa Newell in our preview. Guy had a good game, but not a great game. You know, just 16 points in 34 minutes. And then, you know, Silas DeMary with 23, 7 of 8 from the line. But a volume shooter. I mean, he puts 18 up in the air, knocks down a couple threes. But I thought we did a pretty good job against Newell. Again, he had his moments, and you can tell the young guy's got a bright future ahead of him. But I thought defensively we did just enough to kind of get them off their game. And it's like, hey, somebody else is going to have to beat us. And they weren't able to do it. And again, I don't care if it's 1 point or 1,000 points. I just want to get out of there with the dub. Just want to get the road win. We get it. We can feel good about that. So now Florida's coming up, and it's a big one. You know, Florida beats Auburn. And I think that's the real challenge if you're the Florida coaching staff. Right? When you start working through all this, how do you pull those kids out of the clouds? You know, what do you do? You know, it's... Hey, you're number 3 in the country. You just beat Auburn. You're believing in yourself. And now you got to go face all those crazy people in Starkville, Mississippi. Because I know I can count on our students to do all they can with full voice to ensure this is a hostile atmosphere. Not in a negative way, but not necessarily in a polite way. We're not going to do anything stupid, but we're not going to be out there asking for autographs either. We're going to get out there and get after you. And you know, we've talked extensively about how this team this year has not had the signature SEC win. You're beginning to kind of run out of opportunities, but man, this could be a huge one. No question about it. So let's kind of take a look here and kind of see how this Florida season has played out. I know you guys, you know, you're probably big Florida fans, but I think, you know, you go back and you begin to think about, okay, what is this, what's this Florida team all about? You know, that's, and I think that's a question a lot of people have. How good is this Florida team? Well, they're good enough to go in there and beat Auburn. And they've always had the athleticism. You know what I mean? It's like there's never been any question about is Florida talented enough to do some good things. Well, they certainly are. And I think that's the thing. Now you begin to ask yourself, too, how mature is this team? Are they mature enough after a huge win to go on the road and play up to their full potential? That's a really good question. But this Florida team has kind of quietly, you know, I guess because Auburn has been so good, and then at times, you know, Kentucky's had their moments, Tennessee's had their moments, but Florida, you know, guess they're 20-3, 7-3 in the league, so they go undefeated in non-conference. 11-1 there from the O'Connell Center, 4-2 in true road games, 5-0 on the road. So if you want to beat them, chances are you're going to have to do it in your own gym. Well, the good thing is we get them in our gym. So let's see what happens. They open up the year with a 15-point lead over South Florida. Blow out the Dolphins of Jacksonville, get Grambling State by 24. They go to Florida State, rivalry game, win by 13. Blow out Florida A&M, Southern Illinois. You're like, Steve, I mean, they haven't really played anybody. I get it. Well, then you get Wake Forest down in Kissimmee at the ESPN Events Invitational. Man, and listen, this isn't a Wake team. It's been great. But, you know, Wake and the ACC, really kind of more of a basketball conference most years, and they get them by 17. They blow out Wichita State to win the event. In the SEC-ACC Challenge, they get Virginia by 18. Holiday Hoops Giving event in Atlanta, they beat Arizona State by 17. And then the big one, you know, to me, and granted, this North Carolina team maybe hadn't been what they've been historically, but you got to go play them in Charlotte. Not Chapel Hill, but it's still a partisan crowd. And I'm not sure how many Florida fans made the trip up in December. But the Gators win by 6. They're back home. They blow out North Florida. They get Stetson by 40. And then we get into SEC play. They go to Kentucky. Barn burner of a game. Top 10 matchup. And Kentucky escapes 106-100. Man, it's like old school NBA. Then they absolutely ambush then number one Tennessee. Maybe you've forgotten that. I mean, those of you that follow SEC basketball very closely, like, Steve, I remember that. I mean, that just came out of nowhere. We knew Florida was good, but they whack Tennessee 73-43. And I think the big, probably the biggest accomplishment is you held that Tennessee team to 43 points. That's crazy. It's kooky talk. You go to Arkansas, you win by 8. Not a big surprise there. I mean, Arkansas was still kind of finding a sense of itself. And then you host Missouri. This Missouri team is just one of those ones you just kind of like, you can't get a good sense of them, but it's like, what's really happening with this Missouri team? Missouri goes into Gainesville and gets them 83-82. You're like, well, that's peculiar. You mean you beat Tennessee by 30 and then you lose to Missouri? And no disrespect intended to Mizzou. But this Mizzou team has been good on the road. And I don't know that anybody expected that. Truly. 24 win over Texas. They go to South Carolina. We talked about how difficult it is to play at South Carolina. As bad as things have been, they have still done a very spirited of effort when it comes to defending the home court. Florida wins that game 70-69. The same team that absolutely assassinated Tennessee gets out of there by 1. Then they get Georgia by 30, the same Georgia team that we played this weekend. Of course, this game was in Gainesville. And then all of a sudden, you got to go play the return trip to Tennessee. And the Volunteers were ready. It was nearly a complete reversal of fortune as the Volunteers beat Florida 64-44 and hold Florida to just 44 points a game. They get Vandy, and then they go to Auburn. Arguably the loudest victory, not just in the conference, but maybe in the country, as far as validating your status as a legit team in this NCAA tournament's coming up, and not to mention really putting yourself in the race for the SEC. You go to Auburn and you beat them at their place. You talk about a net climber there. My goodness. And now they'll head to Mississippi State. And you'd love to be kind of buttoned up like if they had a huge game on Saturday. They don't. They host South Carolina. So while this is going to be an emotional challenge for this team and coaching staff, it's not a true sandwich game. But I kind of like where we sit. And then people are like, oh, you know, they're going to be so angry. You know, that stuff doesn't matter, guys. Great teams are great teams. Well, they're going to be focused because they're back in the race. I think sometimes we forget what it's like to play. It's been so long. We want to assign motive because we think it makes sense for us. Like we kind of assign motive to what we think other people would do, what we think how we would react. You got to think these guys have got sports psychologists and trainers and all these people out there trying to keep them focused, you know.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is a very good Florida team. But again, there's been a little bit of Jekyll and Hyde with them at times too. Even with the gaudy record, there's some games you look at and say, you know what, they probably should have won that game much more impressively. And other times you look at them and say, man, how in the world did this happen? Averaging 83.7 points a game, giving up just 66. So a good defensive team. Outscoring opponents by just over 17 points per game. Shooting right at 47%. From the field, right at 34%. Then they have attempted 623 three-point shots, made 213. So about 9 a game. So unlike Georgia, we should expect to see some offense involving the perimeter game with regularity. Shooting about 71% from the free throw line. They pulled down 997 boards, so averaging 43 a game. So rebounding clearly a strength. They've out-rebounded opponents by just over 9 per game. Dishing out 357 assists. It's a team game. 15.5 assists per game. Opponents just 11. They have turned it over 255 times, so just over 11 per game, which is not a gaudy stat. Their opponents just over 12.5, and so the differential is pretty close. Getting about 15 points a game off turnovers. And they are a team with some length and athleticism. They will get out in transition when they can. 113 blocks, averaging about 5 a game. Let's get inside the numbers, look at the individual numbers here. But I don't know how many times you've watched them. But this is one of the more athletic teams we're going to see. Walter Clayton Jr., 17.5 points a game. He has started 22 of 23 games, did miss one game. Elijah Martin, 15.3 points a game. Will Richard, that's my Louisiana upbringing, or living, 13.3. Alex Condon, 11 points. So four starters in double figures. Very balanced scoring team, and they run about 8 to 9 guys out there. Maybe not as deep as they were in a non-conference. They've kind of, Golden's kind of settled things with about 8 players, but they whip it around a good bit. But you get 3 guys that are playing 30 plus minutes a game, and so that's the thing you begin to think about. These teams, do they fade? Road games take a lot out of you. We got to find a way to make that happen. 3-point shooting, they've had 3 different players with over 100 3-point attempts this year. Walter Clayton, that's Clayton Martin and Richard or Richard, depending on where you live. But they got a few guys out there that maybe hadn't shot as much that have a pretty good percentage too. But it's going to be interesting It's an interesting matchup. Rebounding has really been a team sport, too. You know, sometimes you just look, you know, one guy's got considerably more than everybody else. Alex Condon has got 187. But then you look down, Thomas Hoff with 140. You know, they've got a handful, one with 151. You know, so you got five guys with over 100 boards. They're going to get on the glass. And people forget, you know, Golden was a finalist for our job. Like, our final three were Jans, McMahon, and Golden. And then Florida comes to terms with Golden, and we begin to kind of target Jans, and OSU goes after McMahon. Contrary to other belief in reporting, that's how it went down. And it's like, it's so funny. Sometimes we get so caught up in our own narrative. It's like, no, no, that's not how it happened. So we didn't get our guy, is what you're telling me? Yeah, not the case. And Chris Jans fits us, but I'm worried about the game, but I wasn't worried about the Georgia game that much until like an hour before, right? Because you know what's kind of riding on this thing, and kind of looking ahead for state, and we'll be locked in, you know, for tomorrow night. Win or lose, we're not going to get caught looking ahead. But we're headed to Oxford on Saturday. We'll have full coverage from the game, and I think, you know, we talk about it being a game-by-game thing. I think Chris Jans and that staff has done a good job kind of getting guys to buy into what's next. Like, I don't think you're going to see State looking ahead to the trip at Oxford, because you have a golden opportunity. I don't want to say to maybe make your season, but to kind of stake your claim as a legitimate, bona fide team down the stretch. And again, there's just so much left for us to play and so many of these games that I think are winnable. And I even think the game at Oxford's winnable. It's a rivalry game. I mean, it's like, listen, Ole Miss playing well, don't get me wrong. But, you know, you get through this week, and A&M is good, but they got to come here. We got to go to Oklahoma. They're not as good as maybe some people thought they would be. Then we got to go to Alabama, and it's always tough. LSU comes here, and, of course, LSU should have beat Ole Miss over the weekend. Did you see that? It was nuts. Crazy. I don't know, how do you let that happen? I mean, you're up one with the ball, and then you charge. You give it up an offensive foul. There's no need to force the action there. You have the ball in the lead. It's under a minute. Make them make a play. But LSU does what losing teams do. They find a way to lose and give Ole Miss credit. They did what winning teams do. They found a way to win. And I thought the play call was perfect. It nearly goes in clean, and it didn't matter who tipped it in. And credit the officials as much as I hate for Ole Miss to win anything. The play was clean. They initially called it basket interference to go and review it, and it was obvious that it was not. And so Ole Miss essentially wins at the buzzer. They give LSU, 0.2 seconds? But that's what happens, you know, when you're losing. You know, crazy stuff happens, and then weird things occur, and then you lose. Losers find a way to lose. And you got Texas coming in here, and then you got to go to Arkansas. And so, you know, there's not going to be any freebies by any stretch of the imagination. But you get through this week, and you kind of feel like you got a puncher's chance in just about all these games. The trip to Tuscaloosa will be difficult. And going to Bud Walton's never fun. But, you know, of course, they're not having the year that they want to have. And really not many teams are, right? I must just kind of be honest. We all get greedy. So looking at the SEC standings right now, kind of just how things work and what our opportunities look like. And let's be honest, kids. We said at the beginning of the year, if we can finish above 500, we feel like we would be in good position. Again, the league is so good this year. Finishing top half of this league should get us a good seed. But we'll see how things go. It's still all within our hands. You know, we're not having to depend on anybody else. But now Auburn and Alabama are tied atop the SEC standings with a 9-1 record. Florida and A&M tied 7-3, just behind the leaders, two games out of first place. Tennessee at 7-4, along with Ole Miss. Missouri 6-4, a game ahead of us, and they absolutely bushwhacked us when they came in here. Both of us 17-6, they're a game ahead of us in the SEC standings. They have lost two in a row, though. Yeah. Vanderbilt now 5-5. Same record as State across the board there, except we beat them, so we're ahead of them. Kentucky 5-5, 16-7. How bad do you feel about letting that one get away? Georgia 4-7, Texas 4-7, Oklahoma 3-7, Arkansas 3-7, LSU 1-9, and South Carolina 0-10. So again, you look here on the remaining slate, State is going to play four of the five, I hate to say worst teams, but the four teams of the five at the bottom. You just took care of Georgia. You still have Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and LSU. So four of the five teams at the bottom of the standings remain on your schedule. You have to take advantage of that. It's a long season. There's always going to be ebbs and flows with everything. There's always going to be things that happen that were unexpected, good and bad, and you got to be able to flush that and kind of put it beyond you. But, again, kind of looking at what you got left, you know, you feel like, hey, we're 5-5 now, you know, and a handful of games left. You know, what's a realistic expectation? So we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games left. You feel like you can get a split. I do. And I still feel like, and I don't know who it's going to be, I still feel like we're going to get somebody. And maybe it's this week. Maybe it's Florida tomorrow night. Maybe it's Ole Miss this weekend. I don't know. I feel like we're still going to get somebody. So if you get one of those two, then it kind of sets up pretty well for you down the stretch. Maybe, just maybe, you can finish above 500 after all. But again, like this team, I still believe that we are a team that could be dangerous come March. Do I expect us to get to the Final Four? No. Do I expect us to win a game, possibly two in the tournament? Yes, depending on matchups. We've got to get there first. So still some exciting basketball. And how, let's be honest, guys, how many times, you know, prior to Ben Howland, even though we, you know, we didn't always get what we wanted to go with Ben Howland, but how many times prior to Ben Howland did we long to be playing meaningful basketball in the month of February? You know, we're in a position, we're playing for seeding in the NCAA tournament. And we're not there yet, but it's all within our reach. And here it is, you know, February 10th, with 8 games to play, and we have a chance to finish in the top half of this league. Those are the days that we long for. You know, it's like, man, I just want to have a chance, you know, a chance to get in the tournament that anything can happen. But here we are. But I've seen some of the people, you know, it's like, you know, we lose to Missouri and like, oh, well, I'm done with this. And then we barely beat Georgia, a team that had only lost one game at home. And people are like, well, you know, come on. Can we stop it? Can we make some attempt to enjoy sports? It'd be great. It would be great. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. Blair Chandler is our friend in the mortgage industry. They don't tell you that when you're young, but you need somebody that can take care of business, right? There's a lot of adult decisions you have to make. Buying a home is one of them. Don't throw your money away on renting unless you have to. And then even if you have to, Blair maybe can get you on a path to home ownership someday. Give him a call today at 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. Blair's got 24 years of experience in this industry. Nobody stays in any industry 20-plus years by accident. He didn't get lucky. He worked hard. He found a way to carve out a niche for himself. It's the best mortgage loan originator in the state of Mississippi. So what are you looking for? Your first home, your next home, or your retirement home? Call on Blair Chandler, a Bulldog through and through. A lot of reaction to the halftime show last night and the Super Bowl. The first thing that I will say is it is a halftime show. It is the sideshow to the real show, which is the game. Of course, congratulations to Darius Slay and the Philadelphia Eagles for winning the game. A lot of anti-Chiefs sentiment out there among people. But again, guys, here's the thing that I know. No matter who performs, no matter what genre they come from, no matter what style of music, there's going to be negative reaction. There's going to be positive reaction. You're never going to please everybody. Yeah, probably the closest we ever came to it was Prince. I still think that's the greatest of all time. That's just my opinion. You know, but you may disagree. I think there are so many more things in life to worry about than the Super Bowl halftime show. I honestly could not care less about who performs the Super Bowl halftime show. I think the whole thing is stupid. And so it's crazy that earlier this week, our friend Crop Dog on Twitter sends me a request and says, Steve, what about best live performances? I thought we could have some fun with this. A couple of live performances that stand out to me that didn't make our list. I don't know if you can find them. But do you remember when Reba McEntire's band died in a plane crash? Do you remember that? And I guess it was the Country Music Awards. She came out and sang Battle Hymn of the Republic, if memory serves me correct. And how poignant and beautiful that was. I'm not a country music guy. But I remember watching that with my family. They wanted to see it, and they brought her out there. And I began to think the strength of this woman to come out here and sing on stage without her band after this unspeakable tragedy is something that I will probably remember the rest of my life. I also remember Whitney Houston singing the national anthem. I believe that was a Super Bowl performance too. And everybody, I would say that's probably the closest we came to being in an agreement about Super Bowl entertainment, how great it was. And it was, you know, it was an important time in our nation's history. And then you have one of the greatest singers of all time go out there and belt out our national anthem and made us all very proud. So I thought we could have some fun with this. So I went classic rock today. And I'm thinking maybe on Wednesday we come back with more modern approaches. Maybe we do something a little different. But I thought, you know what, hey, top live performances, this is something we can work with. So Crop Dog, this is for you. I hope the rest of you classic rock bands fans agree. Maybe you don't. And I'm confident as I sit here today that there will be some classic performance that I have forgotten. And somebody's going to hit me up and say, Steve, you blew it. You missed this one. And I'm going to say, you know what? You're right. So here we go. Top 10 live performances from classic rock bands, according to me. All right, number 10. You guys know them from The Boys Are Back in Town. It's Thin Lizzy. Had a great live album called Live and Dangerous. And the lead track, the opening track of the show, is a great song. And I think the live version might actually be better than the studio version. It's Jailbreak. And tonight there's going to be a jailbreak somewhere in this town. Phil, I love you to death. God rest your soul. But if there's going to be a jailbreak, it's probably going to be at the county jail. Just my feeling. All right, number 9, a lot of people think this is one of the best live albums ever made. And what's so interesting about these bands from the 70s is they could really play. You know, they didn't need an iPad to give you a live performance. They were able to just kind of plug in and play. They didn't need all this technology. You know, it's kind of watered everything down. And I think that's why there's so much angst about modern music. But Made in Japan with Deep Purple. Love this one. And I like this rendition of Smoke on the Water. And I like how Richie in the beginning kind of plays it a little bit differently. Kind of messes with the tuning a little bit. And then they break in. And, you know, the Japanese love American rock. I don't know if you know that. It's true. And we can take like a very average American rock band and put them on tour in Japan. And they'll sell out the Budokan. They will. Number 8, and one of the reasons this is a little bit lower is because it's kind of a cliche, but you can't have a live classic rock performance list without Frampton Comes Alive. And I decided to go a different direction here than many of you are expecting me to go. And I think, you know, like Mike Myers said, you know, in Wayne's World, you know, you live in a suburban area of Chicago, it's like you're issued a copy of Frampton Comes Alive when you become a teenager. But Show Me the Way is the one I decided to go with. And it reminds me of my Uncle Warren, who was a guitar player in a band called Phoenix. They used to play a lot in South Mississippi. And this was a song that he loved. Absolutely loved it. And of course, you know, that was, you know, that album is when they introduced the vocoder, right? I mean, it's like we'd never heard that before. Like when we do, you know, Do You Feel Like I Do? It's incredible. And so it revolutionized so much. But Show Me the Way, I think, number one, it's a great song, but also, two, the performance, amazing. Number 7, and I had to slip this one in, right? I always think about my buddy Murrah down there around Jackson when I talk about Ronnie James Dio. And, you know, before there was Dio, before he was with Black Sabbath, which eventually became Heaven and Hell, because Ronnie James Dio just kind of had a problem trading on the name Black Sabbath because Ozzy had made Sabbath so big. So they changed the name to Heaven and Hell after, ironically, the Heaven and Hell album. But prior to that, Ronnie James Dio, the father of metal, was with a band called Rainbow. Also, ironically, with Ritchie Blackmore. But I think my favorite song from them, and there's a better live version on YouTube that didn't make iTunes or Spotify. But this is from the On Stage live album from Rainbow. It's Man on the Silver Mountain. Absolutely dig that one. And you can hear, you know, kind of the birth pangs of metal in this live performance. All right, number six, arguably the greatest frontman of my lifetime. Dave Murray disagrees with me. Dave says, excuse me, Mr. Mick Jagger. And I said, you know what? I just don't think that Mick has the range that Freddie Mercury did. And so we're going Queen and went with the Live Killers album here. Could have gone a lot of different directions here, but there's a Queen song that only Queen fans truly appreciate, right? Because, you know, everybody saw Bohemian Rhapsody, and you know how extensive the catalog is. But I think this song is one of the heavier songs in the catalog, and I think this live performance really encapsulates how that song was written and how it should have been performed. It's Tie Your Mother Down from Queen, again off the Live Killers album. Number five. We mentioned Mick Jagger earlier. I love the old Stones live performances. There is one on YouTube, but I don't know that it was recorded on an album. And if it is, we need to find it. But there is a live version of Wild Horses on YouTube that is absolutely phenomenal. I don't know who captured it. I don't know what the project was, because, you know, back in those days, you couldn't sneak in you know, cameras and recorders. So clearly it was something that was a production. But I decided to go with one of the tracks off the 1970 release, Get Your Ya-Ya's Out, which is a great great name for an album. But I went with the classic Honky Tonk Women. And I think something about the crowd being a part of the chorus kind of makes this one stand out to me. So there you go, Honky Tonk Women from the Stones off Get Your Ya-Ya's Out. Number four, and this is probably the version that everybody knows. There was the studio version, but the one that gets played on the radio the most is the live version of Statesboro Blues from the Allman Brothers live at the Fillmore, legendary music venue in the South. And it kind of became the home base for the Allman Brothers. And it's like you hear it, and it's like they're so tight, you think it's a studio recording. It's not. It's a live recording. Matter of fact, the guy comes out there and introduces them. Ladies and gentlemen, the Allman Brothers. And the next thing you know, we're rocking, baby. Absolutely love it. My favorite Allman Brothers track, and I love the live version so much. All right, number three, we couldn't get through the 70s without mentioning Kiss. And again, I think this version, the live version of this track, is probably more widespread than the studio version, even though they're both great. But I like the live version a little bit more because Paul Stanley is so incredibly into it. You can tell they were having a moment with the crowd, and you've had those moments at shows. You know, it's like I tell people, it's kind of like Bodie from Point Break used to say, it's a place I lose myself and I find myself. You go to a show and you feel like a kid again. You don't think about the bills. You don't think about, hey, I didn't text this person back. Just for a couple of hours, you can just kind of relax and just kind of be, right? Just kind of be in a moment. And that's what that makes me feel like. But it's Rock and Roll All Night from Kiss Alive. Of course, they did Kiss Alive 2 and 3. It's funny. You know, Kiss, here they are, you know, basically 50 years after I found them and still playing. Yeah, still playing. Number two, much like the previous three tracks, the previous two tracks, the live version of this track is more well known. And again, I think a lot of it is just because, number one, these guys from the 70s could really play. There are a lot of people today that without the beauty of technology, you would not know their names. But when you hear that saxophone bring in Turn the Page from Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band, you know exactly what's about to come. I love the Metallica cover version of this, but nothing's better to me than the live version with Bob Seger on Turn the Page. It's incredible. It's incredible. And when he gets to that part two where he talks about being strung out from the road, it feels so authentic to me. Like he's really actually tired from being on the road. Number one, could have gone a lot of different directions here, and I went a little bit cliche here. But I love the fill-ins and the add-ins that Robert Plant bring to Stairway to Heaven on The Song Remains the Same. You know, when they get ready to bring it in, he says, I believe this is a song of hope. And, you know, she's buying the Stairway to Heaven. And then there's a part two. He says, you know, when there's still time to change the road you're on. And then he steps in and says, at least I hope so. Yeah, I think there is just some personality in the live performance that magnifies the message of Stairway to Heaven. I love it. And so, again, Crop Dog, thanks for the suggestion. And, again, we may do this as a two-parter. We may come back and do have a little fun with this on Wednesday, too. We'll see. You know, and so, again, I point that out to you, even though we've got a backlog of requests. I know some of you are thinking he'll never get to mine. Eventually we will. But sometimes something pops up that is just kind of relevant to me and kind of scratches me where I itch. And this is one of them. So I hope you enjoy the list. I know many of you from my generation, you know all of these songs and you know all of these bands. And maybe you haven't listened to the live performances that much, other than maybe a handful. But I remember being a kid, hearing Turn the Page and Rock and Roll All Night on the radio, the live version. And it's like, you made me, like when I heard Kiss playing on the radio, I wanted to go see them. I'm like, I've got to go see them. It sounds like everybody is having such a good time. And it's kind of the reverse with the Seger thing, right? With Turn the Page. It's like people are sitting there just kind of in quiet reverence of what's happening because the song is so incredibly emotional. But if you are a Led Zeppelin fan and you have not listened to The Song Remains the Same, let me encourage you to do that. That could be your next traveling soundtrack. Just kind of put it on, let it play through. And there's just something about Stairway to Heaven and the way Robert Plant kind of delivers that message that I think is incredibly special. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out and let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, at Dogmatic67. That's DawgMatic67. You can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle. Just hit subscribe. Make it easy for yourself. You can find me on all forms of social media at ScoutSteveR. And if you're not following me on Twitter, what are you doing with your life? You know? I bring good content. I do. So be sure and check all that stuff out. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, I love Campus Bookmart. I do. I don't just say that flippantly either. I know when I need Mississippi State merchandise, I don't have to guess about where to go. It makes life a lot easier on me because I know I'm going to get exactly what I pay for. I'm going to get quality merchandise at a quality price from quality individuals at Campus Bookmart. Next time you're in town, go by and see their smiling faces. You may get a complimentary hug. I always do, but maybe that's just me. I don't know. Maybe it is. I am charming, truly. That's why I got such a good-looking wife. But you know, whether you have a good-looking wife or not, Campus Bookmart will be the way to go. Chances are she is good-looking. Maybe you just don't appreciate her enough. I'm just saying. But nevertheless, let's get back on track here. Campus Bookmart. The best place to buy Mississippi State merchandise, whether it's apparel or gift ideas, diploma frames, always such a good decision for your Mississippi State graduate. If you can't make it to town to peruse their fine selections in person, you can do so online at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75, any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. All right, let's talk a little women's basketball. I know many of you are down on the team and down on the coach and down on the season. And I understand. I guess I'm one of these Mississippi State apologists in some respects because I just say, you know, hey, listen, I'm going to hope for the best. I'm going to pull for the dogs, and I hope we win. You know, many of you are out for blood because we got absolutely bludgeoned by Alabama. You know, we knew, hey, they were a good team, but we're getting them in our place. We got a chance. We lose that game by 20. And I think in many respects, for many of you, it kind of exhausted the last of your hopes to make the NCAA tournament. We were hoping to finish in the top half of the league. Well, now we're three games below 500, so that, you know, that's not going to happen unless something, you know, really, really special happens. But we got punched in the mouth right out of the gate. It was 8-0 before anybody got comfortable. And they end the first quarter, Alabama 26-11, and kind of pick up where they live off in the second period and beat us by 10 there. I mean, so essentially, let's be honest about it, the game was pretty much decided at the break. Now, we came out, give our ladies credit, we did not quit. We win the third period by 3, but we dug ourselves such a big hole it was difficult to overcome. And we had a chance to cut it to 10 or less a couple times there in the fourth quarter, and Alabama answered with some good perimeter shooting. You know, free throws down the stretch, too. You could tell we were kind of whipped a little bit, too. You know, sometimes you just get beat, and that was the case. DeBrechapeau led State with 14 points, a big three down the stretch to kind of keep things somewhat interesting. Matina Okot, 12 points for her. Drakela Jordan with 8. Chandler Prather with 8. Denim DeShields did not score. Took 5 shots from the floor. None found the bottom of the net. Handed out 1 assist and had 3 steals. Destiny McFall with 10 points. State's second leading, or third leading scorer, pardon me. But just wasn't a good night. Anaya Russell, 18 minutes, 8 points. And I've read so many comments on social media. And I hate to preach about this stuff. I do, but I'm going to anyway. We're not going to have an altar call or pass around a plate and hum just as I am. We're not going to do any of that stuff. But here's the thing. And we have to make some very judicious financial decisions. And so we lose this game, and people are like, you know what? We need to fire Sam Purcell. I don't think we should, and I don't think we're going to. And here's a couple of things that I'll say about that. We get so caught up in the emotion of the moment sometimes, we don't think about, we got to balance the books. And people are like, yeah, but Steve, if we won more, we would make more money. Well, in women's basketball, that's not really true. And at our height, at our peak, under Vic Schaefer, we were losing over $3 million a year. And so in order for us to go out, and I read a comment, I responded to it in the Facebook groups. They said, you know, we go out and hire a named coach. I just wonder how everybody wants to pay for all of this. It's like every time that, like a good example, like the baseball seat, you know, the rigs go up this year. And then we announce the plan for football ticketing, and it's like, well, the prices for the seat licenses are going up a little bit, and then people complain. And then we're like, hey, I don't want to pay this. Well, somebody has to. You know, it's not like we have a checkbook that has an unlimited amount of capital to work with. And so it's like we don't want to pay when the ticket prices go up for football, which is what pays for everything else. And I remember, wasn't too terribly long ago, that we instituted, you know, parking passes for women's basketball, and I thought we were going to have a revolt. We had never done it before. I thought, were they $15? I think that's right. I mean, I may be wrong. They're like $15 just for the pass. And then we had people, we had fans reaching out to Vic Schaefer, emailing Vic Schaefer. I can't believe you're doing this to your loyal fans. $15. And people are ready to, you know, to come up in arms about it, ready to come to blows about a parking pass for women's basketball. We can't expect Mississippi State to just, hey, our fans are upset here. Let's just go fire the coach. Because the thing that I don't think people comprehend, and I've done my best to explain it, and I'm going to try again. Let's say we fire Sam Purcell. And I suspect, I don't know for sure, but I suspect, you know, when they made the NCAA tournament a couple years ago, that he probably got an automatic rollover. That's probably in the language, and that would be kind of typical, right? If you make the tournament, you get an automatic rollover in your contract. That's pretty standard language. Not every contract has it around the country, but that's typically the case. So you get the automatic rollover, right? You may not get a raise, but you do get the extension. That's typically how that works. And so last year, we didn't make the tournament. And so chances are he didn't get a rollover. I would not have rolled him over, and neither would have you. And that's not to being critical. That's just good business, right? You know, we're not going to give you an extension and a raise when we don't make the tournament, nor should we for anybody, right? It's just like the Mike Bianco thing at Ole Miss, right? They all wanted to fire him, and what do you know? They get hot, and they win the NFL championship. I would just about guarantee you, and I don't need anybody to tell me, I just about guarantee you in Mike Bianco's contract at Ole Miss, there was an automatic rollover for making, not only making it to the regional, but probably some nice bonuses were awarded for making it to Omaha, and then probably other bonuses on top of that for winning an NFL championship. There's incentives in every contract, right? And so all of a sudden, if he got an automatic rollover, then you can't fire him. And if you do, it's going to be very expensive. And so in the event that, let's just say, we poll the Facebook people 5 minutes after the game. Hey, do you want to fire Sam Purcell? Yes, I want to fire Sam Purcell. Okay, we're going to have to write a check. And chances are, if he didn't get rolled over last year, that means he came into this year with, you know, 3 years on a deal. All right, so we got to write that check to buy out the remaining 3 years of that contract. And by the end of the year, maybe it's two. And you got to buy out all his staff. And then you got to buy out the coach you want to hire. You're like, oh, I didn't know that. Well, and you want to name coach, right? So now it's got to be even bigger check, because bigger names have bigger contracts with bigger buyouts. And so this may hurt your feelings, and that's okay. But it would be an absolutely idiotic decision for us to go buy out a coach to fire them, and then to go buy out another coach, and chances are that's probably got 3 or 4 years on a deal, to hire them to come in here to run a sport that we're losing money. But Steve, it's all about the money. Well, it's economics. And it's so interesting, too, that there are some people out there that say, hey, we need to run this thing like a nonprofit. You know, we need to spend everything that we make, which is, you know, I don't know how you do it in your life, but that's not good business. And the same people that want us to run our athletic department as a nonprofit also want us to go spend, you know, what was it, $27 million to replace the lighting standards and everything. They'll just figure it out. Same people that gripe about seed licenses going up. Does it make sense? Right? So we're going to run it as a nonprofit, and then we're going to be upset when we don't have the money in our coffers to be able to go buy people out. All of it works together. You said, but, you know, somebody will always step up. Not always. Not always. You say that, but is it you stepping up? Are you willing to write that check? I would suspect not. And so I just think so much of this is counterproductive. I'm a Mississippi State guy. I am also, despite rumors to the contrary, I am not a kind of person that just believes that we should just always trust the coaches or always trust the administration. I don't always trust things, and I pick up the phone and call people, or I request a meeting and try to find out what's going on. And more times than not, I get that meeting. Sometimes I don't, because sometimes people are not willing to talk about things. And you know what? That's okay. I mean, it's my desire to get information for all of you and for all of our subscribers at Gene's Page, but sometimes there's not an answer yet that they're ready to communicate. And so people sometimes are hesitant to go on the record until they get all the facts. And certainly people aren't going to go talk to us, yeah, we're going to fire a coach. You know, sometimes we get that information 24 hours before it happens so we can be prepared. But I share that with you because I just saw some comments. It just kind of, I won't say troubled me, disappointed me. I get it. We're not having the year we wanted to have. But I think if we're fair with ourselves, if we go back and look, outside of that loss to Missouri, what game have we lost that we should have won? Now, we were hoping to beat Alabama. Alabama's a ranked team. In our gym, we thought, hey, this is a chance for us to pick some things up. But now, I am still supporting Sam Purcell. I am still supporting Mississippi State women's basketball. And I am going to be supportive of every coach on this campus as long as they are a coach on this campus. And then, you know, certainly towards the end. And again, this is not handing out resumes. But there were some of us that I kind of figured out pretty early that the Ben Howland thing wasn't going to work. And it wasn't just – I'll give you guys a story. And, of course, there'll be people out there that, you know, there's the keyboard cowboys out there that, you know. I can't remember what game it was. We got absolutely hammered in men's basketball. Under Ben Howland. Hammered. Hammered. And we should have been back on the floor the next day, working through what went wrong. Not to mention, too, that, you know, that's what good coaches do, right? That's what good coaches do. When we go out there and we get hammered, you got to hold people accountable. That's part of coaching. You're not their friend. It should be a friendly relationship, but you don't befriend your players. And so we get cracked in the hump, and we don't even practice next day. We don't even practice. We decide, hey, you guys go get a massage and just take the day off. Well, they already have an NCAA mandated day off already. But because Ben didn't want to practice, we didn't practice. And you know what happened the next game? We got beat again. And say, well, you know, Steve, you got to try different things. But I'll just tell you, coaches that don't have an edge have players that don't have an edge. And when you go out there too and it's basically losing's acceptable, well, you're going to keep losing. It's just the reality of life. And I think in this NIL world, you're going to see even more. As long as my check's clear, I don't care. I'm guaranteeing you that sentiment's already out there. All right, so Bulldogs back in action on Thursday. They will travel to Vanderbilt. We'll preview that game on Wednesday's show. Vanderbilt ranked 24th right now. We'll see. We got to go to Florida. Florida has not been good. A&M, I mean, you know, A&M hadn't been good this year, but they're going to have athletes. Then Vic comes back, the return of Vic Schaefer. I'm curious to see what type of response he'll get. I suspect that he'll get a lot of applause. I think people have kind of moved on, and now we kind of appreciate it. And it's harder to appreciate it when he's coaching so well. He beat South Carolina over the weekend, and we're losing. That's tough. It is. But I suspect that Vic will come back. And listen, Vic loves this place. And he comes back, and then there'll be some anxious moments, I'm sure. But there's five games left in a regular season. And so, you know, you look at this and say, okay, I'm counting Texas as a sure loss. But if you could find a way to get Vanderbilt, and that's tough to do on the road in the SEC, and you get Florida, and they're not good, and you get A&M at home, and somehow you could get Auburn at their place, and Auburn hadn't been good, you know, then all of a sudden you look up maybe down the stretch and say, okay, maybe we've salvaged something, and maybe you head to the NCAA tournament by virtue of the strong close. And maybe you're in a situation, too, that you got to go to Greenville and win a game, maybe two. But I'm not giving up on the tournament just yet. And I'm going to advise you not to do the same. And so, but we can't fire a coach every time we lose a game that you expect us to win. I want to win every game, every single game in every sport, every time out. Every time. I expect excellence from Mississippi State, but I think it's important for us to have a realistic view. I mean, it's no way to run a business. I mean, like, good example, think about your own job. Do you have growing returns every single year? Every year? You said, well, Steve, I've built my business up year after year after year. Well, maybe you just hadn't lived long enough. Because there will come a point, you know, maybe COVID comes along, right? Or you have some personal distractions. Maybe some things fall apart in your life and you're not totally focused on work. The longer you work, the more likely you are to run into a year when things are just kind of tough. You know, maybe there's a downturn in the economy. And so, no, you're not going to set records year after year after year. You may for a stretch, but eventually there will be a leveling. And sometimes you're just going to have a bad year. Would you want somebody to say, hey, you know, listen, you know, hey, the first 5 years you were here, you set records every year, and then all of a sudden you kind of leveled off last year. This year you're descending. So you know, you're trending the wrong direction, so we're going to have to fire you. You know, so I get it. You say, well, these guys are paid more money than me. There should be a higher level of appreciation for the position and a higher level of accountability, but that's not always how it works. You have to think about the economics of it all, too. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think you're going to see a big rash of firings in non-revenue producing sports for anybody. Unless somebody steps up and they're willing to write a check, I just don't think the financials are going to be there in order to do that. Not with this house settlement. And people keep acting like that's just pretend or monopoly money. That is a very real thing. It's going to be voted on in April. We expect it to pass. And maybe you've heard there's another group of people that opted out of the house settlement that are filing their own lawsuit. You know, so this is still, and I'm sick and tired of all this courtroom stuff. I wish we could just play ball. But this is kind of the unintended consequence of the house settlement and paying players, is that now you no longer have the money to just go be willy-nilly and go fire coaches and have all these huge buyouts and things of that nature. And I think you're going to see the way contract language is structured in the years ahead change a little bit. I don't know if you're going to have people willing to give the big buyout anymore. It's just my personal opinion, because it puts you in a position where you can't make HR moves. And you can't make coaching changes the way you want to, just because of the fact that you just don't always have the money to do it. And then you get so desperate because you're like, hey, you know, we can't keep losing money. We at least got to stop the bleeding. So let me go see if I can't get a donor to write a check. That's a tough position to be in. So I think you're going to see the way that these contracts are structured. Of course, the Jimmy Sextons of the world will fight against it. But there will always be a market correction. And I think that's where we are right now in college athletics. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. If you don't know the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, you owe it to yourself to do some research. How many times do we say it, hey, we need to get together more, and then we don't do it, and then the next time we see somebody at a funeral, we say, man, I hate the circumstances, we need to get together. Well, you know what, instead of just saying that, it's just kind of part of a rite of passage, why don't you make the plans? You look into dates at the Starkville Clubhouse, and then get a hold of your friends, your family, and say, hey, these are the dates. We're all going to get together. And you know what I would do? Before I even, like if I called up Bill, hey, Bill. Hey, man, I'll be talking to, you know, George and Brian and everybody else, and we're going to bring all the family in and go to a couple ball games together and say, I hear Stark Vegas Clubhouse. You in? Yeah. Well, then I'm going to call Brian. Hey, I talked to Bill, and he's in. Are you in? Oh, yeah. You got to use a little bit of salesmanship to pull these things off, because people are going to find excuses. But you have no excuse when it comes to the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, other than the fact that it may be booked, because it's the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. If you're bringing a large group to town, don't overthink it. Don't go out and get five or six hotel rooms. That's a waste of money, right? You can have privacy, but also some communal areas to just kind of recreate and enjoy being together, just playing catch up. That's the fun part of the trip, right? It's not just going to the ball game and going to dinner. Sometimes it's just being around the people that love you the most and the people that you care about the most, and having a chance to just talk about nothing. Sit around, watch a little TV, watch some Netflix, play some cards, and just kind of get caught up on life. And then all of a sudden, your heart is full. Yeah, it is. Now, Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, and when you do, their Facebook page will auto-populate. You can check out the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guest. And also, some booking options are going to come up. Airbnb, VRBO, sure. Maybe you've got a credit you can use. But if you want to save some money, and I'm sure you do, book through the Evolve website. And use promo code BSR10. That's Beautiful Steve Robertson and the number 10, BSR10. And you get 10% off your stay just by listening to our show. How cool is that? It's so easy to find. It's out past the Highlands, kind of tucked away in a quiet area. It is 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. Be sure and check it out next time. And it shouldn't be just like a flippant decision. You need to make some plans. You do. Be the linchpin within your own group. You take responsibility and you plan this big event. And that's not a drum. That's a dog that needs her nails clipped running across the hardwood floor. But nevertheless, let's talk a little bit about this pitching rotation is out. So no real surprises. The Saturday thing, I thought it could have gone either way. So Pico, and I've been saying this since July, I expect Pico to be the Friday night starter. Really good fall. He has been really good in spring training. As Lamonta said today, this is the heaviest he's ever been. You know, so he's got a little more to work with. So feel confident with him. Guys, he's not Dakota Hudson, okay? But I think you're going to see the best version of Pico you've ever seen. And for those of you that hadn't had a chance to get out and go to scrimmages, which are most of you, you're going to see a very competitive Pico. I mean, we're talking to him this summer after he turned down some money to go pro. And he's like, I just want another year working with Parker. And he's got 2 years of eligibility to work with. It's not like he's going to be a senior in eligibility. You know, he still has leverage. So it's a smart move, I think, for him to come back, especially being a left-hander. And again, people forget. You know, he got back on the bump last year in less than a year's time. And it took some time to kind of build him back up. It takes time. By the end of the year, he's doing a good job for us, right? And so he will be your Friday night guy. I thought Saturday would be either Ligon, possibly Pruitt. Over the course of the last couple weekends, Carson's been hittable early. It's the first inning that's gotten him. And he settled down after that. And so I start thinking, okay, well, if we can get through the first inning with him and not have to chase a ball game, we'll be okay. But we have options. And I think, hey, this was maybe our plan heading into fall. And then we would let guys kind of compete, figure it out. And so the good thing is that in the event that Carson can't get it done, well, you've got somebody you can plug in. It's not a TBA type thing, right? How many times do we do that? You know, okay, it's going to be Nate Dolman, TBA and TBA, right? Because we didn't know. We didn't know who we're going to pitch. And then sometimes TBA would be Evan Cieri. The next week it would be, Owen Stevens. It's just, you never know. Last year you didn't have to worry that as much because you had Gerangelo and Cal. But Sunday, Stone Simmons. And watching him this Sunday, he was absolutely outstanding. Gets a 1-2-3 inning with a couple Ks in the first. Gets two quick ones in the second, and then it's back-to-back walks. And he has two-out walks will kill you. And then he gets a K to get out of it. And then next thing you know, next inning he comes up and rolls up a ground ball, and we booted it. And then there's a hit by pitch. Next thing you know, you're in trouble, but then he gets out of that too, Stone is – this is the best version of Stone Simmons that I have seen. And that's saying a lot considering how long he's been here. But, Stone last year – in the spring, we thought, hey, he's looking good. And then he started having all this inflammation. But, things have really bounced back well for him. And I think he is a guy, number one, that the guys respect. He is the last link to the NAFL championship team. And that's not really by design. It's just kind of what's happened. That's just the hand that life has dealt them. A lot of people would have quit. A lot of people would have said, I'm just ready to go make some money. I'm ready to get out and begin my life. He stays here. He finds his wife. Future wife, and now he's getting a chance to be an SEC starter on the weekend. And so that's a grown man taking the mound on Sundays. And I don't know if you guys know, and we'll get into Friday, we'll preview a little bit. Guys, I did some research. Guys, Manhattan is going to be terrible. And you say, Steve, don't say that. Well, I'm not playing the game. They had 22 guys hit the portal. And some of those guys didn't get picked up. Some went to JUCO, and that's going to happen. But they lose four of their five top hitters. They had six guys that made all-conference last year. And that's on a losing team. Six guys that made all-conference, and five of the six transfer out. Travis Hanson, the third baseman's back. He had nine bombs last year. And so that's a roster that has been turned over. The previous coach left to return to LaSalle to restart their program, so they promote their pitching coach. And it's been eventful. Their pitching coach now stopped pitching at Manhattan in 2023. So he's, you know, 2 years removed from being a player with the Jaspers. And so, of course, you know, Steven will still be very involved, even though he's the head coach. But this is a team that's roster has been ravaged by the portal because of a coaching change. And then, you know, they don't really have a facility there. Like, it's a trip, you know, to go play somewhere else. You know, that's been the case for a while. They're back at Clover Field for the second straight year. And, yeah, it makes it difficult to recruit. But they have some guys back from last year's team. If memory serves me correct, they only have 4 returning pitchers, and none of those guys won a game. And then when they went out in the portal, they went out and got a couple of guys. One guy only threw 7 innings last year. Had an 0-0 record, an ERA of like 7.75. You know, so they went out and got some guys. They got a guy from Villanova that's thrown some, but not with great success. And maybe they'll be good in their league. But I really think that you're going to see, if we don't go out there and walk the ballpark, which would be an anomaly under Justin Parker, I think you're going to see a sweep this weekend, and there certainly should be. I think you're going to see a lot of people pitch. I think you're going to see a lot of people have a chance to hit. And I think you may even have some 7-inning games. Now, as we have discussed on the show and on the jeanspage.com message boards, the tentative plan is to play 4-2-1. 4 o'clock on Friday, 2 o'clock on Saturday, 1 o'clock on Sunday. There is some weather out there that we're monitoring. And, you know, people have brought up so much about that. Why don't, you know, I know you got to make some plans, but if you were going to be here anyway, chances are you're taking the day off work. And that's just more time for you to go eat at Bulldog Burger Company. But we're still monitoring the weather. Dr. Brown and those guys don't miss. But we got rain tomorrow, Tuesday and Wednesday, 90% chance of rain. And that's going to warm things up a little bit. And then after the rain of the weekend, it's going to cool back down. But Friday, a high of 59 is projected with a low of 33. And then rain on Saturday, high could be as high as 75. We just don't know what's going to happen with that rain. And, of course, it's right in the middle of our weekend. So do we play a doubleheader? Do we move Saturday's game up? Do we move it back? We just don't know yet. And that's something that people that know a whole lot more about meteorology will determine. And again, Dr. Brown and everybody involved, they know what they're doing. So be mindful of that. Also, a lot of questions about, who, Steve, who's going to be the closer? And it's going to be a by-committee approach, and it has to be considering the amount of games that we play. And so just like, you know, Landon Sims didn't throw a lot of twice on a weekend very often. There were times he did. There were times he didn't. But we've got a by-committee approach, and Nate Williams, another good outing over the weekend. Now, the second pitch that he threw turned into a souvenir because Garrick Fry hit an absolute bomb to right. And then Williams bounces right back and gets 1-2-3. And so he has pitched to 7 hitters this week, and he struck out most of them and gives up 1 hit, 1 run, 7 hitters. And as a closer, you know the margin of a victory is slim, right? Because you can't go out there and give up a 1-run lead. That's your job. But Nate will be in the mix. Gavin Block will be in the mix. He had a rough outing on Tuesday, bounced back and was better on Sunday. I would say Chase Hungate may be our most consistent reliever, and you'd expect that. You know, he's a veteran guy from Virginia. He's pitched in Omaha, right? And he was also instrumental in eliminating us from the NCAA tournament last year. You know, so we got a firsthand look at him. Hungate is a real dude. And this is a guy that pitched starter quality innings for Virginia, because Virginia, people forget, Virginia made it to Omaha last year, and they just didn't have a lot pitching-wise, starting-wise. They pieced it together, and they get to Omaha, and they had an offense that was kind of built for Omaha. They just didn't execute when they got up there. But wasn't Hungate's problem. But, yeah, he's going to be a big part of things. He's going to eat up some innings. And now that Pruitt didn't win a weekend spot, he's going to be one of those guys, too, that probably gets you from the starter to the closer. Same thing with Robert Fortenberry. And so I like the pieces that we have, because this time last year we had no clue who was going to be the closer, right? That was probably the biggest question of the year heading into it. You're like, oh my gosh, are we going to put Tyson Harden out there? I thought he went in the portal. Well, of course, now he's playing pro ball, right? Again, a testament to Justin Parker and Tyson Harden for working hard and turning his career around. That guy was on a trash heap of college baseball. Now he's a pro baseball player, you know. So I encourage you to have some trust in Parker. Again, he's earned it, right? It was funny at the clinic the other day when Lamontas was introducing everybody. He goes, and that's Coach Justin Parker. He and I work on the pitching, you know. And just so you know, it's all Park. He has autonomy. That's just Lamontas being silly. But, yeah, it's going to be a by-committee approach, and it has to be, because there's some weeks we're going to play five games in a week. You can't trot that guy out there. Hopefully you're not having a lot of save situations. Hopefully you've got some pace and some margin between you and your opponent. But SEC weekends, I mean, that's our league, right? It's not a 1-2-run ball games, right? There's a lot of games that boils down to the ninth inning. And so you've got to have guys and go out there and throw strikes. And in this league, you've got to have guys that can throw velo, you know. Tyler Davis last year, born again hard, right? And then he emerged as a guy that we could really count on. But there were times even he was up and down. And I think a lot of it, too, is just, you know, the flex of being so reliant on Tyson and Tyler last year. By the end of the year, when you had to have those guys go twice in a week and sometimes twice in a weekend, you were asking a little bit too much. And so I think the introduction of Chase Hungate and the return of Nate Williams kind of makes things a little bit easier to cope with. And Pruitt's a guy that can be on the back end of games too, because he's really funky. I mean, really is. He's got that big beard, the goggles, and kind of got a little bit of I don't know how you say, quirk in his delivery. You know, he just does some things that are a little bit weird to give hitters a different look. And so I think he's a guy that can get you through the order without a lot of trouble. But, yeah, we're in a lot better shape in this bullpen. And I know there has been, you know, some reaction. I think that if you have been a subscriber to Gene's page, you know that we've been expecting Pico to be the Friday night guy. And then Saturday would be kind of an either-or situation. And then, again, Stone, the last couple of weeks, has just been outstanding. And he has earned that spot. So, now, we're not married to this, right? You try it this weekend. You know, we still got, you know, 4 weekends before we go to SEC play. But, you know, we go out to Houston. That's an RPI climber weekend for us. You know, Rice is not expected to be very good, but you got Arizona, the team that won the last Pac-12 championship, and you got Oklahoma State, a team picked to win the Big 12 this year. So, those are two teams we need to go find to get a win from, and then have them go out there and help our RPI the rest of the year. And so I don't want to be experimenting when we go to Houston, right? You want to get things settled. And I'm going to go ahead and prepare you guys for this now, because there's a lot of people out there that are sleeping on Missouri State. I don't know how well they're going to pitch it, but those guys can swing it. We'll talk about them more next week. But that is another RPI climber for us too, because of the fact that they're going to be one of the better mid-majors in the country. And so you win that series, and I think sweeping them is going to be tough. I mean, if we go 6-0, we go 7-0, let's say you get Southern Miss too down there, and then you start out and you get Missouri State. That Missouri State win, you know, if we are able to sweep that series, and again, I'm not projecting that right now, but if you're able to go out there and get that, that is something that will prove to be significant later. It may not mean a lot to our fans now, because a lot of our fans love baseball but don't know baseball. But Missouri State is going to be an NCAA tournament team. And that league is usually a two-bid league. So it's not just a tournament champion. You know, you're going to have room. So we expect Missouri State to end up in the NCAA tournament, provided they stay healthy. But that's going to be significant. But we got to get through these first couple weekends and have a sense of who we are on the mound and how we want to manage this, because when we go to the Astros Foundation game, that's going to be some sure enough competition, and you're going to have an opportunity out there to really help your prospects of hosting. You know, you go out there and you get two games, you feel good. You get three, you feel outstanding, right? And you absolutely have to get Rice. Rice is not expected to do much, but you know, we've got to go out there and take care of business. But I say that because, you know, people forget in 21. You know how many different Sunday guys you had in 21? Have you forgotten? You know, we started out with Sarantola on Sunday, and then we go to LSU, and he'd never pitched again in a meaningful inning except in relief. And then Jackson Fristo went in, and then Fristo kind of hit the wall. And then Houston Harding took over on Sundays, and Houston had been dominant in the midweek. And so Lemonis has shown the willingness to kind of change things around with those guys. And last year, after Nate Dolm got hurt, we had to kind of change things up. You know, then all of a sudden Brooks Auger was the guy that you expected to be on the back end. Now all of a sudden he's got a pitch, and he was kind of up and down at times. And so what you see today on the graphic may not be what you see next week. You know, and for 2 years there, you know, we had Casey Hunt, a guy that we thought an awful lot of, and he was a guy that was always a little bit nicked up, a great young man. Wish him the best. He's doing a great job in the minors. But I don't know that we got the best version of KC, because you go back and think about in 2022, we had to make him close. He started out as a starter, gets injured, and we bring him back, and we were so deficient on the back end, we had to take KC and put him out there just to give us a chance. You know, of course, he had the big save against Ole Miss, and then, you know, they blow the save against Missouri. I mean, it's just, you know, we have not been in this position with the amount of quality arms in a while. And I would say back to the NAFL championship year. And even that year, we didn't get great starting pitching much of the year. You kind of went out there with 1.5 pitchers, right? And you never knew from one weekend to the next who was going to be able to go get the job done until later, when Will Bednar kind of became the guy you knew that, hey, when he goes out here and pitches, we got a chance to win. And last year, you know, we had such high hopes for Nate, and he gets injured. And I still love Nate, and he had a good year when he was healthy. But Cal Steven loses that game to Air Force and then gets knocked around by LSU, and people are like, you know what? He's not going to be able to do it in the SEC. Ends up being an All-American. So trust the coaches in that aspect of it. You know, they will figure some things out with the guys. But don't think that right now we are married to the idea that these are our three SEC starters. The competition continues, and these guys are going to have to prove it over the course of the first month of the season, or they won't be starting in SEC. But again, I feel really good about Pico and really good about Stone. I would feel a whole lot better about Carson had he had some better outings down the stretch. Because early in the spring and in the fall, you're thinking, well, you know, they're tinkering, right? And so, yeah, control is not always going to be the best because you got different grips you're working on. You're throwing a live hitting. It's not like it being in a pitching lab. But by the time you get to the end of spring training, like this weekend, it's like this should be the closest thing to an actual game that you play until we play a game. And so the time to tinker is over. Now we're fine-tuning and getting ready to go play next weekend. And it still was just kind of up and down. It was. And that Carson can, you know, he can sling it. He absolutely can. But he's got to find that off-speed stuff to kind of keep people off the fastball. And one of the things that I think is important to understand, too, for those of you that attend scrimmages a lot, when you get so many looks at these guys, right, the only pitching that our hitters have seen have been our pitchers, other than a couple of scrimmages that we played, right? And so against other teams. And so as the fall goes along and the spring goes along, you kind of figure out everybody's tendencies. You figure out, hey, this hitter doesn't like this, so I'm going to stuff him with that. But once you get multiple looks at people, you kind of get an idea of what to expect. You're like, hey, he's not able to spot out the breaking ball. I'm just going to sit fastball. I know it when it's coming. So it's time for us to go play somebody else. And I like what Lamona said today, too. Now we're all on the same side. You know, we were all the same team, but you had the maroon team versus the black team, everybody competing for roles and jobs on this team. And now we can be kind of be one team again. Yeah, we were all one team, but there's always that competitive edge, man. You're always out there, you know. Also, too, Lamont has confirmed our report from yesterday that Highfield and Michael O'Brien are just fine. Yesterday, they set out this as a precaution. O'Brien, of course, crashed into the wall early on. I think it was a smart thing to pull him. He was pretty woozy getting up, and he's like, oh, I'm good. Lamont said he's been texting him all morning, telling him how good he is. You know, he's ready to go. But and then, of course, Ross Highfield gets hit with a pitch. And, it's just precaution. Right? There's just no point in rolling those guys back out there less than 100% when we could get ready to play three games this weekend. But college baseball is here. Yeah, it's here. And in some ways, it feels like it was just yesterday that we left Charlottesville, Virginia. And other times, it feels like it's been forever since we've sat at Duty Noble Field and watched the Bulldogs play a game that really matters. And I can tell you, I think I missed one scrimmage. And Mike Nemeth just does an amazing job for us keeping up with all that stuff. But the reality of it is we're ready to see the Bulldogs play a game that matters. And so please turn out this weekend. Opening day is always very special at Duty Noble Field. We have the greatest cathedral in all of college baseball. And we have the best fans as well. So please turn out and be a part of it as we take on the Manhattan Jaspers. And again, we'll talk more about them on Friday's show. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.